Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in another Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on Thursday, November 15th, the college podcast yesterday. Murray gave out a winner with Ohio minus the two, got up to three for the most part. And the Bobcats take care of business with a blowout victory over Buffalo. We're going to talk NFL coming up. Mike Clay will join us at the back end. He has eight prop bets for us, so we'll dive deeper into those numbers. He's been very helpful and productive on the podcast in that regard. And Murray, a little bit of a comeback for Murray. Not even, only grinded out a few hundred bucks on the Bonanza, but I took a big hit. And, I mean, come on, five trips inside the red zone for the Bucks. They come away with 3 points, just a headache. Fitzmagic was Fitz tragic. So we know what we're getting with him. You know, it's always a bet with trepidation on the Bucks, but Kai, I'm losing my lead here.
Yeah, slowly losing your grip.
How do you feel about the Giants? Big W, right?
I feel good. I'd be lying if I told you I wasn't excited about that.
All right, then no one really cares. That was just a throwaway line.
All right. Somebody cares. A lot of people care.
All right. Well, maybe we'll talk about the Giants coming up. So Murray's coming up, obviously a lot to get through and a busy week, especially with this Rams Chiefs game moving from Mexico City due to the field conditions. We'll be at the Coliseum in Los Angeles. We've seen some line movement there and a record over under. So a lot to dive into straight ahead here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
And here I'm the one calling you out for being so busy yesterday's podcast, and I was the one who was delayed today.
Yeah, and I just had a meeting get canceled. I feel like I got my whole morning free. This feels good, man.
It must. And the book's feeling good after last week's comeback. And, you know, we say these things, but everything's in small sort of dissected compartments. You guys were not getting completely buried the last few weeks, but here and there, Sundays were not good, and then you had a strong Sunday, but that's after a bad Saturday.
Yeah, we had a really bad Saturday this past week. We got really lost a lot on Ohio State, Washington State, and certainly Clemson, the big game at night. But Sunday morning, we had really one of our best mornings I can remember here. We won big on the Titans game. We won big on the Falcons game, the Browns beating the Falcons. We would have done even better. We had a guy that had 60K on Jacksonville plus 3.5. They ended up losing by 3. They made a 55-yard field goal down by 6. And then the Colts came back and missed a field goal, and the game landed on 3. So we could have done much better than we did, but we still did very well. But everybody went back for more on the Packers in the afternoon, man. And they, you know, that Green Bay-Miami line got all the way up to Green Bay minus 13 at kickoff here.
What was it most of the week, 10.5?
Yeah, like 10, 9.5, 10, 10.5. It got all the way up to 13, and it didn't deter the public at all. They just kept firing away at a minus 13, and Miami kept kicking field goals. Green Bay decided to go the other way. They decided to score touchdowns instead. It's usually a better strategy.
So it was weird because you talked about on the podcast last week about how you had all these afternoon games that were like predicted blowouts, and like finding the right one was the key here. And obviously Seattle proved to be the nice cover in that afternoon slot, but obviously the Packers rolled, and as did the Chargers against the soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah, the Chargers was another big loss. We actually lost on all three of the afternoon games. The public was on Seattle as well, or some of the bigger bets were on Seattle, I should say. So we lost on all three of the afternoon games, but we came back big time on Sunday Night Football because there were so many parlays and teasers closing with the Eagles, Dallas winning straight up. That was a huge win for us, one of our biggest wins of the year.
So how about that? The house needing Dallas, like you joked about a week ago on the podcast, the house was going to need Dallas in a primetime game?
Yeah, well, the public loves to fade a team they just saw play a terrible game. We all know that. And Dallas going into that game was coming off of a terrible loss at home to the Tennessee Titans on Monday Night Football. So it wasn't a big surprise. Everybody was firing in on the Eagles. I think the Eagles were coming off their bye week, too. So it seemed like a very logical spot to back Philadelphia, but it didn't turn out that way. Dallas was able to get the win outright. Another bad loss for the Eagles, and the Redskins now two games clear in that NFC East.
Well, it's funny, but it speaks to the point that you've talked about a lot. If, you know, the teams that are home, whether it be the Eagles in Jersey or the soon-to-be, you know, Vegas Raiders or whatever, if they're bad, the public's not afraid to go against them. And here's America's team getting pounded because, like you said, they remember what they last saw.
Yeah, the public doesn't have the public's loyalty is to whoever is winning them money. You know, like 2 years ago, the Raiders made the playoffs, and we would get a ton of Raider money every single week. But as you can imagine, this season, we're not getting any Raider money. In fact, we need the Raiders almost every week. We needed them big time on Sunday against the Chargers. There's not a whole lot of money in the pool yet, but I would imagine we'll definitely need the Raiders on Sunday afternoon. They play at the Cardinals. Right now, they're a 5.5-point dog. I would think the public's going to probably lay off that game for the most part, but the people that do bet it are going to definitely take Arizona.
And let's not overlook the most important decision of the weekend. Murray back in it, back in the bonanza. Big win. DK takes a big loss, as we predicted and sensed. And I was encouraging you just to pull a Gurley, slow it up before the goal line, let the other team mess up.
Sometimes that's the best way to go. You know, by the time I got home last Thursday night, I turned on my TV. It was already 14-7 Steelers, and there was like 10 minutes left in the first quarter. And I said, boy, I hope I don't lose this one because I think I was on the right side of this one. Luckily, that game went way over the total. Did take a loss on the under sacks prop, though.
Yeah, you're Mike Clay on the group chat not giving you winners.
Yeah, I know. It's harder than it looks. It's harder than it looks, man. You know, they're not – not as much needling coming from there anymore now that he's trying to make picks of his own.
It's
tough, man. NFL.
It is funny because, you know, I always say this because people don't know what it's like in that situation. Basically saying there's an emotional variable. You know, I always say this about the president. Like, if I were president, I would do this. Nah, you don't really know. You don't know the pressure. You don't know the classified information. You really don't know what it's like unless you're in that chair. Well,
yeah.
Very similar situation, Murray, of course. Is the chair
right.
That you're in the podcast here, is people are like, oh, I would have done this. It's like, all right, well, give me a play. Once you go on national television, in this case, a national podcast, and break down a game and subject yourself to criticism, because we know when we give out winners, everyone is just as vocal as when we give out losers.
I like the comparison you just drew there between giving out picks on radio or a podcast and sitting in the Situation Room of the White House. The pressure is very similar, and there's just as many people following along and hating on you when you do lose. I've been giving out a lot of college winners on VSiN this year. I'll tell you that much. And I gave Mr. Musburger a winner last week. I gave him Browns +4
Ooh,
in the Super Contest.
That's really what we should start the podcast with, recapping how you did with Mr. Musburger as Mr. Director.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm up to 6-4 on my Brent plays. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with that because, you know, I'm always the first one to say how hard I think the NFL is. So if I could finish the year like 10-7, maybe 11-6, I would feel like I did a good job for Mr. Musburger.
So, Murray, so you've been giving out some nice winners like the Ohio Bobcats last night.
Yeah, that was a good one. I gave out on VSiN last week Mississippi State +25, I think. Man, that was an easy win against Alabama. Never had to worry about that one.
We had some ridiculous endings there.
Yeah. The first half was really the bad beat, I thought. If you had Mississippi State first half, certainly that was a tough way to lose. But the game was fortunate. Fortunate that Mississippi State stayed within the number.
Yeah, I mean, incredible. Because Alabama's, I say trying, but threatening to score in the final seconds in that final possession. So, big interesting storyline the last couple days with the change of venue with Mexico City. I talked to one odds maker earlier this week, and we were just chatting it up, and he said the volume of bets coming in was so rare, even though it was a high-profile game, but like on a Monday, that he said, I swear some of these people think the game's in L.A. because they were listed on the bottom, and I conceded I've made that mistake, at least not betting, but talking about a game when it was in London, because you see it on the slate, on the 1 o'clock games or whatever, and then you're like, oh, that game's in London, because you just forget and whatever. You're just looking at stuff. And and sure enough, this game did get moved to L.A.
We see that all the time. We see guys, I've even seen books, not to name names, but I've seen books put up numbers that they obviously thought the game was in one team's home stadium, didn't realize it was on a neutral site. I'm not making fun. People make mistakes. But I definitely think a lot of the bets we saw early on the Rams was because people thought the game was in L.A. and now it is.
Why do you think that? Is that because there's just unusual volume on like a Monday for the following week?
Yeah, and I don't think there was like a whole lot of – like, it's hard for me to believe that people thought Rams minus 2.5 on a neutral field was value. I mean, do you really think the Rams are that much better than Kansas City? The Rams barely beat Seattle. They lost to New Orleans. They were, I think, fortunate to beat Green Bay. And they just lost Cooper Kupp for the year to a torn ACL. He's been a really key guy for their offense. So I don't see – there's not much, in my opinion, that tells me that they're better than Kansas City is right now. Kansas City is just rolling along.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I like the dog in this one. And I had heard some stuff that people were looking to bet the under because of the field condition, especially the first half under. I know there was some buzz out there. And then everything gets canceled and relocated, which is great. I mean, obviously you don't want a horrible field. It's not great because it was a cool situation in Mexico City, but if the field's like that, you got to move the game. And so you get it moved to a full point, and those listening, not necessarily huge gamblers in terms of experience, but the reason, Murray, that it's only moves a point is because 3 is such a valuable number. It's not like it's moving from 4.5 to 5.5. That's a valuable number, and then the Rams don't have the most distinct home field advantage like maybe Kansas City does on their end.
Yeah, you can't just look at it as like going through from 2.5 to 3.5 is not really like 1 point, so to speak. That's a very crucial point. And I think the number was already a little high. And what you just said, I think, is the number one thing. The Rams don't really have any home field advantage at the Coliseum. I actually think the Kansas City Chiefs players and the staff are actually going to be happier that they're playing the game in L.A., even though it is a true road game, versus going down to Mexico City. I have to think all the parties involved are happy about this.
I wonder about the air quality, not into the line. I'm just saying from a playing standpoint, things like that, everybody knows what's going on in SoCal. I've checked in with some friends who grew up in nearby areas. It's been horrible to deal with. But there is if there's a game being played, you know, there is an air quality. I'm just curious how these guys do it.
Yeah, and I also – you have to think that there won't be a lot of people there, because people in Southern California right now have got much bigger concerns than a football game, and they're only going to have about, 6 or 7 days to sell tickets for this game. It's not like they've been selling tickets for this game for the last 6 or 7 months. So I don't really expect a big crowd there. It's going to be a very unique game. Considering the magnitude of this matchup, I feel like there's not going to be a whole lot of people in attendance.
That's a great point, and a buddy of ours on a group text mentioned, how about all those people who plan forever? Forever, meaning like months, about booking their tickets, getting their hotel rooms, thinking it'd be a fun, maybe Chiefs fans or Rams fans flying out for this high-profile game and booking all their airfare, and then the game gets moved. And that's got to be a buzzkill. So you're right, like maybe Chiefs fans that were planning to go elsewhere don't have the disposable income to now fly to L.A., and it will be a strange game. I'm psyched that we were able to relocate for a Monday Night Football crew and our staff here, but we're looking at 3.5 and a record total, Murray. A record total 63.5 in our database, which only goes back to the mid-80s. That's the largest over-under in an NFL game. The record currently is 62. And I don't – so where do you see this total going, actually, now that we know it's on a clean field?
You know, I thought it would go down a little bit. You know, we're taping this on Thursday morning. I thought it would have gone down by now, to tell you the truth. I thought we'd see some sharper players taking it under. That's what we saw in the Rams-Saints game a couple of weeks ago. The sharper groups were betting it under. Obviously, it went way over. But, you know, so far, we've just taken some small tickets from the public on the over. There hasn't been a lot of movement. If I had to guess, I would still say it closes more like 62.5 or 63. But there's certainly going to be plenty of public support for the over, especially in an island game like that. So the book is almost definitely going to need it under.
So just to clarify, you will have more liability on the over, but you have to move lower with the smart money slash market.
Yeah, we always move with the sharper players and with the market. But like I said, that the Rams-Saints game, I think that these groups were betting it under 60, and it went down to 57.5, 58, and then it ended up landing 80. So I won't be surprised if there's a similar situation here in this game where the sharp groups come in and bet it under, and it goes down a little bit, but that doesn't mean it's going to go under, man.
Exactly. And there are other games this weekend, and we should probably talk about those too.
Yeah.
Including
a good
tonight.
Thursday night game.
Yeah, including tonight.
Game.
Let's start there. And this line, I was surprised it didn't just start at 3. It's now at 3. What do you guys got, minus 3, minus 20?
Yeah, we got minus 3, minus 20. And speaking of surprising me, the public's really been on Seattle in this game. There's a lot of tickets on Green Bay money line, which I did expect. But most of the money in the side market has come in on Seattle. They've pushed it up from 2.5 up to 3 early this morning, and now it's at 3, minus 120 on the Seahawks. You know, Seattle obviously is better at home, and the home teams on Thursday Night Football have been great this year. We all know that, but I am a little surprised. I thought the public was going to come in much heavier on the Packers, and they still might. I mean, we still have a long way to go before kickoff, but usually Green Bay is one of the most popular bet teams here every week.
Yeah, I'm surprised this game didn't just open 3, given that it was on a Thursday. On a Sunday, I would understand, but I'm surprised. But I guess there was an unknown variable with Green Bay being such a public team that you could see it. But we've talked about it forever. These home teams, the favorites on Thursdays have just been a covering machine, particularly typically the home team.
You know, I wanted to give Mr. Musburger Seattle minus 2.5 for the contest yesterday, but if I give him that, then he's got to put in his whole card for the week. Like, if you use the Thursday night game in the Super Contest, you've got to submit your whole 5-play card. And it's really difficult to do that on Thursday. I don't think you should do that on Thursday. I think you're better off waiting till Friday night or Saturday morning.
Yeah, the only way you could justify it is if the card closed and like it was a pick'em game and then like Aaron Rodgers is out and the adjusted line was like 9. So it's almost like a free winner. It's like a free winner. Then you could justify the other 4. But if it's a coin flip game like all these games are essentially, you don't have enough of a quote-unquote advantage to justify the other 4 picks having to meet the deadline as well.
Yeah, one time when I was in the contest, it was a Giants-Panthers game. I don't remember all the particulars, but the Thursday night game moved by like 3 or 3.5 points. So I submitted my card on Thursday, and the team that the line moved towards lost by like 5 touchdowns. And I was just like, oh, great, I'm glad that I did this early.
But yeah, nice value there.
You don't want to do that unless you really, really like it. And I didn't want to – I would never give him a Thursday play, which would then force him to put in his entire card. Although I did think Seattle minus 2.5 was good because at the time we were recording the show, it was starting to move to 3 in some books, 3 even, 2.5, 20. And we know how the home teams have done on Thursday Night Football. It's so hard for these road teams. It's such a short week. And Green Bay has played a brutal schedule recently. They were in L.A. to play the Rams. They were in New England on Sunday Night Football. They had a good game on Sunday against Miami, but this is a much stiffer test on the road in Seattle.
I'm trying to dig up the stat. It's really remarkable. I believe the last 13 teams that played on the road on a Thursday after playing on a Sunday, so not off a bye, that had to travel 2 time zones or at least 1,500 miles, 112-1 against the spread.
Yeah,
We saw it with the Vikings-Rams earlier this season, which landed 7, actually.
Yeah, that was a push.
But the other teams have just been, you know, it makes sense. Like, some streaks are stupid, some trends. But this one actually makes sense because it involves travel and a component that actually matters.
Yeah, and the trend this year that I saw was the only 2 teams that have won on the road on Thursday Night Football were teams that did not have to travel a great way. Like, I think it was Philadelphia. They won in New York against the Giants, and Denver won at Arizona. Neither of those were long journeys for those teams, and all the other teams that had to travel a relatively long distance have lost on Thursday Night Football.
And those teams were favored, right? Like, those teams were the supposedly better team, right? Like, and that's... There's not many dogs covering on these Thursday night games, and obviously throughout the season opener. But here it is. Yep, since 1994, Thursday night road teams, and then the 1500. Everything else is correct. 1-13 straight up as well. So that helps when it's it's a short number like that. Okay, so going into the weekend, I'm surprised the Carolina game's not higher. It's been four all week.
Yeah, we actually jumped up to 4.5 today, or this morning, I should say. Most of the money is certainly on Carolina, as you'd expect. We're going to end up needing Detroit pretty big in that game. Although that's probably not going to be a particularly heavily bet game, but the money we do see on that game will almost certainly be on Carolina.
Why not? Are there other morning games? Because I don't see any other morning games that are that intriguing from a public's perspective.
No, but there's a lot of games to choose from. I think Dallas-Atlanta will be the most heavily bet game, and that my guess is that most of the money is going to come in on Dallas in that game. Dallas off of a very good win, Atlanta off of a very bad loss to Cleveland. That should be the most heavily bet morning game. The game the public is really going to be firing in on in the morning, though, is definitely the Steelers. Right now they're laying 5.5 in Jacksonville. Don't be surprised if that number goes up a little bit, maybe 6 or 6.5. And Jacksonville will probably be our biggest need in the 10 a.m. games.
That's interesting because Jags obviously beat the Steelers both times last year, including in the second round of the AFC playoffs.
Yeah.
At some point, the Jags are going to look like the Jags at some point, right?
I don't know. I mean, they just – even their defense isn't playing well now. You know, everybody piles on Blake Bortles as they – should, but it's not like Jacksonville's defense played any good on Sunday against the Colts. They played a very poor game in that game. The Colts are really playing quietly, are playing pretty well right now. I really like Frank Reich, and he's done a great job. They finally got some blocking for Andrew Luck. I like that Colts team. I don't know if they can catch Houston, but they're a team that's playing much better this season.
How much of the Eagles' success last year is Frank Reich? Because they certainly don't look the same.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I hadn't even really thought about that. But no, their offense does not look the same at all without Frank Reich, an offensive coordinator. And, you know, I think I joked in the summer that going from Chuck Pagano to anybody would be an upgrade for the Colts, and I do feel that way. But I don't want to take anything away from Frank Reich. He's done a very good job there. They were banged up at the start of the year. They lost some close games, but they're starting to get healthy, and he's developing a good rapport with Andrew Luck. I like the Colts. I think they're a pretty dangerous team here down the stretch.
Colts are 4-5. Imagine if they were 4-4-1 and did not go for it in their own territory in overtime late and settled for the tie. Then the Texans would probably be 5-3-1 instead of 6-3, and there'd be a little bit tighter division race there. So all these I play
true.
For the win.
It's true.
Yeah, I do too when the game starts, but in certain situations at the end of the game, sometimes the tie is the best you can do. But with that being said, it's fine. I just think it's going to be something to revisit down the road.
It's a very good point, and it certainly could end up costing them potentially a division title. You know, Houston at some point has to lose some of these coin flip games. I mean, the biggest reason right now why the Titans and the Colts are so far behind Houston is because Houston is just undefeated in these 50-50 coin tosses. Because both Tennessee and Indianapolis are playing pretty well right now.
By the way, speaking of coin tosses, do we know if the Chiefs won the coin toss last week? Hadn't they won all nine?
Yeah, they were 9-0. I don't know.
Kai, can you get on that? And we'll get to it by the end of the podcast. The Chiefs had won nine podcasts. All right, we'll revisit. I like that. That's some authentic broadcasting right there. No stopping the videotape or the tape recording there. So go ahead.
I got to give you guys before we skip to the afternoon games, though, DK. I got to give you our biggest need is right now in the morning games. I think the people will find this interesting. We had a guy yesterday bet over 52 in the Buccaneers Giants game for $100,000.
Whoa!
So right now that might not be our biggest need by Sunday morning, but as we record this on Thursday morning, Giants-Bucks is our biggest need here at the Superbook. Giants-Bucks under, I should say, is our biggest need here at the Superbook. So six-figure bet on the over. With Eli Manning and that Bucks offense that can't, and with Dirk Cutter calling the plays, a pretty ballsy bet.
So is this just a house player?
Yeah, he's a good player. He's a guy that we give extended limits to. And look, I'm not going to sit here and act like all this guy does is lose, because that's not true. He's had certainly had some success a lot of times this year. He's had some losses. He had a bad weekend last week, but he's not like a dummy. I mean, he's had some real success this season, and he came in pretty hot yesterday.
So take me through that process. What are his normal size bets?
Usually he'll bet like 50,000 on average on a side in the NFL. This is certainly, even for him, this is a very large bet.
And does he usually bet this time of week, or does he do it on Sunday?
No, he usually bets early in the week. He's usually a guy that gets in pretty early, and we had, certainly this bet we had to approve, obviously, and we told him as long as he bet it early enough in the week, we would take it from him, and he did it right away. He did it on Wednesday morning. He gave us plenty of time to work with it, so.
What was the number he
no
got?
No complaints. Over 52. Okay. He bet over 52 for 100,000. So we will have our eyes on the Bucks-Giants game Sunday morning. I mean, won't everybody be watching that big Tampa Bay-New York Giants game? I know Kai will.
So, oh, yeah.
I'm swearing off the Bucks after letting me down last week. So who does he go just walk up to the counter, or does he have a dialogue, given he is a high roller? Does he have a dialogue with a manager?
He talks to some of our guys here, but I mean, it's something like that. He's got to talk to somebody first and get it approved. Yeah, I mean,
It has to be approved, but is he like, hey, I'm coming in, I want to put six figures on an NFL total on Sunday? He doesn't give it away, right? He doesn't want to tell you what it is.
Oh no, we would never. We don't ask him that. He called over here. We talked to him, and we just told him that was fine, but he needs to give us some time to work with it, and he said yes. So yeah, it was a pretty simple process.
Is this duffel bag boy? Just kidding.
No, it's not. If it was the duffel bag boy, I would say that. This guy doesn't have a stupid nickname like duffel bag boy.
Maybe he should have a nickname.
I'll work on that.
Come on, guys. We should collectively come up with one.
Well, right. I think we can do better than duffel bag boy.
Oh, fighting words. Fighting words.
I'm not too happy with Mitch and Paul right now. We got into it yesterday. Those guys... very confrontational group over at VSiN, Follow the Money.
Where would you rank this feud with the KD Draymond Green feud right now? Are we going to have to separate you guys in the locker room? Does management have to take a side here and suspend somebody?
If Paul Howard showed up right now, we'd have to be separated, yeah. All I did was I told them that the Duke team of this year would beat the 1990 UNLV Rebels team. And they told me I was crazy, and I told them they were a couple of grandpas. And if you think that a team from 30 years ago can beat a modern team, you're a grandpa. You should be you're ridiculous.
Oh, we're going to go down this path, huh? I thought you hate the hypothetical spreads.
I do think it's stupid, but they asked me on their show, so what choice did I have? I mean, they're the stars. So what can I do?
I don't think it's that crazy to say UNLV would win.
We didn't make Duke like a huge favorite. I mean, I'm not saying we made him like a 30-point favorite. We just made Duke favorite. I think Duke would win. I just think it's 30 years in the future. But I know that UNLV team was very good, and I know that Duke is very young, but I just believe that the modern athletes are that much better. That's all.
LJ was a man. I mean, these guys were older, sure. Right? Now Zion Williamson obviously is a man, but I think there's some
pretty good.
There's some physicality there.
And that's fair. I
might take the running Rebels in that one, but I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm usually the guy who errs on the side of like evolution, and like I think the Warriors would kill all those teams. I would think they would kill the Bulls. But
I asked
and kill meaning kill like a double digit win.
Me too. But I asked Mitch who he would pick between this year's Patriots and the 1961 champion Green Bay Packers, and he hung up on me. So it was a. It was very contentious radio.
Oh,
sure.
I love it. I got to go hear and by the way, this was at what time? Like 6:30 in the morning?
Yeah, I do their show at 6:30 in the morning every Wednesday. I mean, I love those guys. I really do. But, I mean, I'm going to tell you what I think, man. If you don't like it, that's fine. But, don't ask me a question if you don't want my answer.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Hey, Kai, we got to clip that off. You don't like what? If you don't want to know what I think, don't ask me a question. All right. I love it. All right, we'll have to take a hard left turn here and go back to the NFL slate. Let's go to the afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look at
any games in the afternoon.
There's nothing. I mean, Arizona's catching some steam here. Everyone expecting the Raiders to lay down. It was 3.5. Now, what I'm seeing, 5.5?
Yeah, 5.5. And really, you know, it's just another three-game card in the afternoon, and two of the games are duds. I feel like we get this a lot in these Sunday afternoons in the NFL, maybe because the schedule is spread too thin with all the primetime games. But we really just have Philadelphia and New Orleans should be a really good game, and we'll have a lot of money on that game. New Orleans will be in every Moneyline parlay, every teaser. The Chargers will certainly be included in a ton of Moneyline parlays and teasers as well. I think people are going to bet Arizona, but how much of a rush are you to get to the window to lay 5.5 with that Cardinals team?
I mean, right? Like, are you kidding me? But this Raiders team is just terrible. And this is a suck for luck kind of situation. They have to lose.
Yeah, I think that's the thought process. Oakland hasn't scored a touchdown, I think, in 9 quarters since the Indianapolis game a few weeks ago, and they just have no incentive to win. And look, when I say that, I'm not saying that the players on the team are going to go out there and try to lose. I know that they're trying to win the game, but this organization has no incentive to win football games, whereas the Cardinals, they don't really have much incentive to lose games. They already have the guy that they think is their quarterback of the future in Josh Rosen. So, you know, I think it would really be bad for the Raiders to win this game and potentially lower their draft choice the way that Kai's Giants did on Monday night.
I mean, yeah, you have to make this season count, right? In order to do that, you have to make it worth – you have to lose this game. Like, you have to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, and the Raiders – the best thing the Raiders can do right now is win one or two games and end up with the first overall pick in April. That's their best – or May or whenever the draft is. That's their best possible outcome right now, and they know it. I mean, they're not going to admit it, and the players, I'm sure, don't feel that way. The players are playing for a job next season, whether it's on the Raiders or with another NFL team. But for the overall health of the franchise, the best thing they can do is lose the remaining games on their schedule.
And they're not good. I mean,
yeah, that would
and
be
they're capable of losing. Very capable of losing this game. Is that they're just not a good football team and they're not well coached.
No, they're not well coached. They're not a good football team. And the Cardinals, I think their offense has been a little livelier with Byron Leftwich in there as the OC. I still like Josh Rosen. I think he's going to be okay. And they've got some solid veteran players like Patrick Peterson, Chandler Jones, Larry Fitzgerald. Arizona certainly has more talent than the Raiders do. So you can see why this number is creeping up, but I don't think this will be a particularly heavily bet game.
Really? You don't think that the public will keep banging the Cardinals here?
No, they'll be much more focused on the Saints and on the Chargers, especially the Saints. The Saints are going to be a very heavily bet side.
All right, let's get to Saints momentarily, but how high do you think this Arizona line can go? I mean, it's still Arizona.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if it got up to 6 or 6.5. I really wouldn't. I mean, look at how high that Raiders Chargers number got. I think we had guys taking 11 on the Raiders last week. And that game was in Oakland. So
they had a very good chance to cover there.
They did. And look, I'd be very surprised if the Cardinals got up to a full touchdown. But no, I wouldn't be shocked if this thing went 6, 6.5.
All right, let's go to the Saints game. 8 for the most part. It's creeping up to 8.5. Where do we go here?
I think it might go down. I think this line is really high right now. And it's just a classic overreaction line where, like, Philadelphia played so bad last week. They lost that Sunday night game. And obviously, the Saints just pummeled the Bengals on the road. They won 51-14, an incredible win for them. It kind of reminds me of last week's game where the Browns number got up. The Browns got all the way up to +6 at home against the Falcons, and it was a similar scenario where the Browns were coming in off a bad loss and the Falcons were coming in off of a huge win. That's where you see these lines get really inflated. I think this number really should be more like 6.5 or 7 at the very most.
I understand you about the Falcons line. That got out of whack, but I disagree with you and the Saints. The fact that they've covered 7 straight, and they're they're on fire, and they have a great offense. And so,
and Philadelphia's banged up in the secondary,
The biggest thing. I mean, Collinsworth was talking about on the broadcast how vanilla the defensive schemes had to be in the second half, I think fourth quarter, when those injuries were mounting in the secondary of Philly. If they're that thin, New Orleans scores every time.
New Orleans' offense is very good, but I still have faith in Philadelphia, Jim Schwartz, and Doug Peterson and their coaching staff. And Philadelphia really needs this game. You know, if they lose and the Redskins beat Houston on Sunday morning, the Eagles are going to be three games behind the Redskins in the NFC East. So this looks like a kind of a kitchen sink game for the Eagles. After blowing that Dallas game on Sunday night, they really need to win this game.
And that Dallas game, can we just – if that guy doesn't drop the pick six and they go up 7-3, the game is completely different.
Oh, there's always a few plays like that that change the game around. But I thought it was an impressive win for Dallas.
Yes.
Jason Garrett actually called a good game offensively. I didn't even know that was possible.
How about the fake punt and going for it on fourth down separately? Imagine that concept.
I know. Yeah, I give him credit. I wish that the Miami Dolphins were doing the same thing in their game on Sunday. They were kicking field goals left and right. I think at one point the Dolphins were down 28-12. It was four touchdowns to four field goals. That's a great way to win a football game.
Well, clearly they don't know your hashtag.
Well, it proved true in that game. The kicking is for losers. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They even had a punt where I forget all the particulars, but I know they punted, and then they punted from like the 38 of Green Bay, and it went into the end zone. So I said something to Ed, like, oh, that was nice, a nice 18-yard net on the punt. And then Rodgers completed a pass to somebody up the field, and they were already past where Miami had punted from. It's like, that's great, guys. That really helps.
You know what this is, this whole thought process, this revolution? It's the angry dad on the couch who would say stuff watching an NFL game, and whether it be the son or the wife, like, oh, yeah, like, you know more than these coaches. And actually, it turns out, like, the angry dad did. Like, these coaches are archaic. They do what's common to stay alive in their coaching career, and they've never thought outside the box until the last few years, whereas people watching at home, and I joke that you've had to have to play Madden a bunch, but you don't. It's just common sense, and sure enough, you do know more than these coaches on certain things.
On certain things. You know, my brother brought up a good point. I was talking to him a couple of days ago. When was the last time you saw a team line up for a fourth down where they were obviously just going to, like, try to draw the other team off sides and have the team actually jump off sides? That never works. Like, why do they even bother with that? Why not just go for it? They always do that where they line up, and then, like, within, like, 3 seconds, everybody at home and everybody on the defense realizes, oh, they're just going to try to draw them off sides, and then they don't. I'd like to see it. They don't jump, I mean, and then they just punt. I'd like to see a team go up there, go through the motions like they're doing that, and then with 1 second on the play clock, snap it. Because I guarantee you the defensive players have let down their guard thinking that it's just a fake.
Well, they don't do that anymore because they actually go for it now. It's almost better to do the hard count sometimes now.
I don't remember the last time I saw a hard count work. I mean,
I've seen it. I think I've seen it this season. It's
really?
Just so
in the NFL,
yeah. No, NFL. It all takes one idiot if you do it enough times.
True. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is the master of drawing guys off sides, but I can't recall seeing that myself. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but
I've seen it. I don't remember vivid. I mean, the best time to do it is end of the first quarter, end of the third, when the game clock's winding down, and you have that luxury with the play clock won't expire before, and instead of just walking to the sideline. Or walking, you can go do that without any having to call a timeout. My favorite was when I was a kid and people do the hard count at like midfield or the 45 of the opponent and do the hard count and then call the timeout.
Waste the timeout.
Right. Or they're on like fourth and goal on like the two, they go to the hard count, don't get them to jump, and then they call the timeout to prevent the 25-yard field or 24-yard field goals of the 19-yard.
Right.
Like, but this kind of stuff happened. And again, the angry dad would be like, well, why would – it's only 5 yards. Don't call waste your timeouts. But people were doing this when I was a kid.
But all this stuff that we're talking about right now is a great example of why I think these, like, 90s teams versus modern teams arguments are so stupid. It's not just because the athletes are better and in better shape and all that. It's also because the schemes and the strategies have improved so much. That's really the main reason why I think the Warriors would kill the Bulls, because in the 90s, teams didn't understand the value of the three-pointer.
Correct.
And now they do. And that's why I think the Warriors would run the Bulls off the court.
Agreed.
It's nothing against the Bulls players. The Bulls players were awesome. But the strategies and the schemes, everything gets modernized. To argue that a team from 30 years ago would beat a great team from now is just ridiculous.
Well, a couple things to that. You're right about the scheme and the evolution of the thought. Like the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns, I believe, would only be middle of the pack or even at the bottom of today's NBA in terms of pace. So just keep that in mind. Now, the reason I've been an advocate of the Warriors in that discussion is because they got a giant break with the salary cap getting juiced up the 1 year that overlapped with Durant's free agency. So it just shot up, and everyone was allowed to basically everyone was allowed to add a max player. So this would be like the 96 Bulls adding Olajuwon, right? Like the second best player. Like that's what the equivalent is. So it was the Warriors, the 73-win Warriors, losing Harrison Barnes and Andrew Bogut and adding Durant. So this would be like those Bulls adding Olajuwon, right? Like upgrading at a position that fit perfectly with them. So you lose
Bill Wennington and maybe Ron Harper, but they get Hakeem Olajuwon as a decent player.
Right. So it's more just the craziness of the league revenue and salary cap. Like, that's what this is. Now, about the Rebels debate, the Rebels were ahead of their time. They were running gun, shooting threes. Tark was great in terms of being a visionary on that front. So that's why I think they could probably hang. And probably, I would probably take them. I really would. Now, I need to, you know, we're talking about a polished UNLV team that we may or may not be glorifying. Maybe this Duke team is going to be that much better by the end of the season. And so maybe that's a discussion worth revisiting at the end of the year when these new parts have more synergy.
It's all possible. I still don't think it was worth Mitch hanging up on me. But you never know. But just a classless move by the guys there.
Well, let's get the GM involved and see if someone has to get suspended because we can't have this infecting our locker room. Speaking
Very
of which, there's been some line move on that Rockets Warriors game. I loved the Rockets last night. I was trying to get down as much, but it's now what, 3.5 with the Rockets?
We got the Rockets -3. Obviously, no Steph Curry tonight. I think the Rockets are just going to be a much better team just with not having Carmelo Anthony on their roster. And I said that before the season started. Whatever team Carmelo goes to, in my mind, he just makes them worse. So I think the Rockets doing the right thing to move on from the Carmelo situation. And the Warriors are a little dysfunctional right now, and no Steph Curry is obviously a big deal.
Yeah, I gave you pushback on that Melo comment, thinking he could fit. You're right. You hit the nail on the head. So Rockets feel like the old Rockets the last couple games. We'll see if that translates tonight, but a big game, and I like Houston a lot tonight. Now it's gotten up to 3. I still like it at 3. I think they roll. Back to football here. So Chargers, Denver, 7. This Chargers team's only lost 2 games, Rams and Chiefs. This is not your September Chargers. These are the November Chargers. They're good. Their yards per play, I think, is the stat. And they're under the radar right now because the two teams that lead the league, which is no surprise, the Rams and Chiefs, but the Chargers right there.
Yeah, you know, I actually bet the Chargers win the Super Bowl in the summer because I looked at their roster and I said, I think this is the most talented team in the AFC, them or Pittsburgh. Now, obviously, I underestimated Patrick Mahomes. I had no idea that he was going to come in and be like the best player in the NFL right away. So it's going to be hard to get good value on that bet just because I don't think they're going to be able to win the AFC West, which means they're going to have to play 3 road playoff games. But this Chargers team is very good. They've got a ton of talent on both sides of the ball. And I think didn't they lose their first 2 games and they've won every game since?
No. They didn't start out 0-2. They started out 1-2. I know they lost to the Chiefs. Yeah, that was 1-2. Remember they waxed Buffalo and then lost to the Rams.
That's right. Yeah, they were 1-2 and then they've won every game since.
Yeah,
some of those have been lucky wins though, or not lucky, but fortunate. I feel like Anthony Lynn has botched a lot of end-of-game situations. I thought he really botched that end-of-game in London against the Titans and was lucky to escape with that win.
Yes.
So I don't trust him, but I do think that the Chargers have really as much talent as anybody in the AFC.
The Bosa situation has been hurting them a little bit, but I agree with you. They've been on a roll, and obviously they would be grabbing more headlines if it weren't for those two teams, the Chiefs and the Rams.
Sure.
But in due time, we'll see. I mean, wouldn't it be funny if the Chiefs don't even win the division?
It's not impossible.
Yeah.
I think it's unlikely. It obviously would involve the Chargers winning at Arrowhead. That game is in December. But it's not impossible. And the Chargers keep winning games. They're a touchdown favorite this week. Kansas City is a dog. Kansas City, for all their success, I mean, the Chiefs really need this game a lot more than the Rams do. The Rams have basically wrapped up their division. Kansas City still has got a lot of work to do just to win the AFC West.
Yeah, it could be a first-place tie after this weekend, right? Chargers get the W. Yeah. I mean, Chiefs are underdogs, right? So it could be both teams. Yeah. Oh, excuse me. The Chiefs still need to have their bye.
Yeah, the Chiefs have another bye week, so they'd be a half game up if that happened.
Right, my bad.
Yeah,
they'd each have two losses. They'd each have two losses. And as you mentioned, there's one game in December at Arrowhead that will prove to be interesting and probably impactful for the division race if the Chargers keep winning.
Yeah, most likely. And if the Chargers can't catch them, they would likely end up being the number five seed and playing on the road, I'll say most likely against the AFC South winner. And they'd be favored in that game.
You mentioned it earlier. I can't believe the Texans have won all these games in a row.
They've won six games in a row. You know, they were 0-3. We were ready to fire Bill O'Brien, and they've somehow ripped off a six-game winning streak. It's incredible. I don't know. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. I mean, the Texans have a lot of very talented players. I think it's a tough matchup for Washington this week. Redskins down most of their key offensive linemen, Brandon Sheriff, Trent Williams. And Houston, really, the strength of that team is that defensive line with J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, and Whitney Mercilus. It's going to be hard to ask those Redskins backup offensive linemen to keep those guys at bay.
I mean, Houston laying three on the road. And speaking of Houston, I finally remembered what I was trying to say earlier, or trying to remember earlier. J.J. Watt is the same size, essentially, as Zion Williamson. So we're trying to put things in perspective. Imagine J.J. Watt doing things on a basketball court. That's what we're looking at here with Zion Williamson when we were talking about Duke. So Sunday night, this number looks like it's come down a little bit. Bears hosting the Vikings.
Yeah, we got the Bears -2.5, -120 here at the Superbook. Now, most of the money and the tickets are on the Vikings. We got about a 3-1 ticket count, 2.5-1 ticket count on Minnesota right now. I think as we get closer to Sunday night, there's going to be a lot of two-way action on this game. The Bears are becoming a very popular public team this season. They've got a huge fan base, obviously, but they're covering a lot of point spreads, and they're covering a lot of big point spreads. They covered as a 10-point favorite 2 weeks ago and as a touchdown favorite last week against Detroit. The public loves teams that cover big spreads for them, man.
How can you not? You have the better team, yeah. And if they're covering the big spread, it's a much more enjoyable root. Like, it's a more enjoyable experience to root for a team that you perceive as better. If they're winning you money, we've talked about it a bunch. There is an entertainment component to gambling, right? There are people who treat this like a job, and that's great, and they win money, and it's all about the bottom line. But there is a much larger portion of people who bet who don't necessarily win money, but it is there's utility in the entertainment value. And much like having a beer watching the game, having a bet while watching a game. Spending money on a bet is the equivalent to spending money on alcohol tab or wings or whatever. Watching the game, going live to a game, you're spending money on that experience. So it's much more fun to bet over or on a quote-unquote good team and rooting for them for those 3 hours.
Well, most of the people that are in the book on a Sunday, they're just having an experience here. They're not out here trying to grind out a profit. They're here to have fun, and they're probably rooting for a favorite like the Green Bay Packers -13 against the Miami Dolphins.
Or parlays. Like, mathematically, parlays, probably not the best use of your money, but either is a lotto ticket, and a lot of times we do that. In fact, I bought a ticket last night for Friday's drawing.
Nice.
Right? That's not good expected value there, right?
No.
Not a good ROI. But why not? And it's entertaining. And
somebody has to win. Would you continue to do the podcast if you hit?
I would. I would probably build a studio in my home so I don't have to deal with the... By the way, what's the temperature out there in Vegas?
It's actually getting pretty cold here, man. When I woke up this morning, it was pretty cold. I think we're... let's see. Right now it says we're at 58 degrees.
Kai's please. Rolling his eyes. What are we at today, yeah. Kai?
At a solid 25.
25. Little flurry maybe expected tonight if the weather... forecasters are accurate.
You guys are the ones who choose to live in Connecticut, Kai. Don't look at me, bro.
I don't choose. I yell at friends like out here. I'm like, I don't know why you guys live here. Like, I had to come here for the job. Like, I have a reason to be here. I don't know why you choose to do this.
I will be in Virginia on Wednesday. I'll be in Virginia Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday next week for Thanksgiving.
Oh, nice.
I imagine it's pretty cold there. I can't imagine it's as cold as it is in Connecticut, but It's probably a little chilly.
Yeah, pack your coat, buddy.
Area.
Pack your coat.
Oh, I will. I will.
So what do you think happens with this, speaking of chilly, what do you think happens with this Bears line with the Vikings?
Yeah, I don't see it really moving up to three. I'd be very surprised if it went to three. I think if anything, it'll go closer to pick 'em, maybe like Vikings plus 1.5 or plus 2. I think the wise guys would really get involved if they got a full plus 3 on Minnesota in this game. I think the perception is still that the Vikings are better than the Bears are.
It was plus 3, though, earlier this week, right?
Yeah, and but that got taken
briefly.
Up pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
So my guess is if we went back to 3, we had guys taking plus 3 minus 120 and guys taking plus 3 flat, I would think if we got there again, it would get bet pretty quickly.
Interesting. And how Monday night? So you think it gets back down to 3 or 4?
The Chiefs game?
Yeah.
I don't think it'll ever get to 4. I that would surprise me.
I think it'll probably briefly after the relocation.
We were never at 4. I think it'll probably go to 3 or stay at 3.5. I don't really have much of a problem with this number. To me, these two teams are like dead even. And there's been a little bit of money on the Rams, so that's why we've seen it push up a little bit. But yeah, I think this number is about right now. Chiefs plus 3.5, plus 3.
Okay. All right, it's that time for the podcast, the Baby Bankroll Bonanza. That's coming up straight ahead after this.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Kai, can we get this on my cell phone for my alarm or something, a ringtone? I need
you got
this.
It, man.
The tunes here, Murray.
Yeah, it's a good theme song. I get a little nervous when I hear it, though, because I know it means I got to make NFL picks. But it's well done music, but it always signals the hardest part of my week.
Pavlovian, you know, it triggers like the Sunday scaries when you. See, I used to have that when I was living in New York before I got into broadcasting. I had a couple of good friends who were roommates, and we'd watch Sopranos on Sunday night. And then the problem is, as soon as the mid-show, end-show, you start getting that Sunday scaries triggering that work, and you had to get up early the next day.
Well, I work on Sundays, so I don't have that. I can't relate to that.
It's the same concept, though. It's the same concept that you hear this music. And you're like, oh boy, yeah. I got to make NFL plays. Well,
I took
a 3K hit.
Panic sets in, man.
Right.
The panic sets in.
I took a 3K hit last week. I can't remember. Was Tampa Bay 3 flat or was it 3-1-10?
I think when you bet it was minus 3 even money. That actually got, or when you picked it, I should say, it was minus 3 even money. But that number got up to 3.5 as we got closer to Sunday. That was one of our biggest wins of the week, actually, was the Redskins in that game. That was a huge win for the house. Probably the third biggest of the morning games after the Titans and the Falcons.
Well, that's what happens here on the podcast. I moved the market.
Oh, I know that. Nobody could argue with that.
All right, so I took the L there. That was the only bet I made. And that's the problem. You know, I wasn't a middle intention, but I was willing to think about playing out of it, but I never got a chance. And that's the problem with some of the middles that I've had, that you give away a good position. That's why it's a little bit dangerous. Obviously, I gave away a good position with the Bears and when they won easily at Buffalo. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you guys. It's a dangerous game out there. It's a tightrope act, and I obviously fell there. But only 3K, not 5K. I'm down to 2480, positive.
Okay.
So, still in the net. And you lost your under 4.5 sacks, huh?
Yeah, we lost that under. How many sacks were there in that game? I wasn't keeping track, but as I was watching the game, I kept seeing the quarterbacks get sacked, and I figured it wasn't going to be a good one for us. But, you know, my buddy that gave me that pick, I mean, I had to track him down to get a pick from him this week. And he finally texted me. He's like, I like these 5 props. Do these for 100 each. And I'm like, dude, it's a $300 minimum. Like, you get your act together here. You know, I mean, come on. It's just he's starting to feel the pressure. He's starting to feel the pressure too. But he gave me one prop and one side, and actually, it was the side that I was going to give anyway. So we're going to be doubling down on that one, and then I'm going to give out his prop bet as well.
Well, you won last week. I lost, so you're at -67.75.
Oh, that's ugly.
But you did win the last hole, So I'm winning the match. Right. You won the hole, so you get to go first.
Yeah, I double bogeyed and you hit it in the drink, so I get to go next. Is that how it works?
I guess that's how it works.
that sounds like a preview of my golf game too, actually. So he gave me five prop bets. I said, dude, pick one of these things out. So the one he wanted to go with, this is a fun one, actually. Will the Chiefs-Rams game be tied again after 0-0? He says yes at -110 for 550 to win 500.
I like it. I think that's a good bet.
That's a fun one. He also gave me Mitch Trubisky under 21.5 completions. I'm going to pass on that one. I told him he's got to single out one. So we're going to go with will the game be tied again? Yes, for a nickel.
Your buddy might be.
That guy is kryptonite on a stick.
He's crazy, man. He's a cowboy.
Misspelling names, and I don't know.
I think that was very intentional that he called him Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, okay.
I think he was going for a funny there.
It wasn't one of our mutual friends saying Robinson Cano after he won a batting title or two.
No, I think it was a play on words there, a little pun.
Broski.
Mitch Trubisky is a bro, so it's pretty funny.
Yeah, Broski. So I have to make a play, huh?
Yeah, that's the concept of the show. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I am going to take the Arizona Cardinals on the money line. -250, okay. Right? Is that what you guys got?
Yes.
For some reason, I'm going to take a horrible team on the money line laying 250, but I'm going to do it. I think the Raiders are that bad, and I don't think they score much against this Arizona D. I'm going to take $5,000 to win $2,000.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you're reaching back and firing. I love it. That's the only way I can get back in this game.
Yeah. So, impressive. You know, I'm not taking that L. I'm not taking the L going down.
From my perspective,
lying down, I should say.
So the only other one, I was already planning on giving it, and it's the play that I did give Mr. Musburger, which was I gave him Eagles plus 8.5. That was the contest number. We have Eagles plus 8 here at the Superbook right now, and my buddy said he liked that one too. So we'll do it for a full 1,100 to win 1,000 on Philadelphia plus 8 at New Orleans. That's Sunday afternoon.
Good. I don't need to get involved in that game because I like the Saints there, but I didn't want to bet it. So I have good rooting interest there. Okay. I actually like the over in that game. I'm going to take the over. What do you guys have, 56?
Yeah, we're at 56 right now, Eagles-Saints total.
I'm doing 1,100 to win a dime on that game.
Okay, so I'm rooting for not the Saints to score.
Yeah.
That should be fun.
Have fun with that one.
Fun. Yeah, that'll be really fun.
You're up again.
That's my full card. I do like Seattle tonight. I like Seattle tonight, but I'm not going to play -3, -120. If we had recorded yesterday when it was 2.5, I would have given it out. But that'll be it for me this week. Just the one prop bet and the Eagles.
The problem with that is Green Bay's good. These Thursday night games have been better when they're bad teams, like Arizona getting smoked at home, the Giants losing to the Eagles. It's just tough because Rodgers is going to make up for some issues, and it's not like Seattle's a world beater anymore. So
no, they're
I'm staying
not.
Away
I,
as well.
Russell Wilson is really playing at a high level this season, very quietly. And one thing I've noticed about the Seahawks is when they decide that they're behind by enough and they let Russell like off the leash, so to speak, they really get into gear offensively.
I agree.
Why are they so conservative to start the game? Let Russell play like that the whole way. You know, once they let him go, he's incredibly impressive, just improvising and making plays with his feet and with his arm. Why not just let him do that the whole way?
I don't know. And I did that piece for .com that posted yesterday. So I encourage all of our listeners to go check it out. It's basically the value of the quarterback to the point spread. And as we talked about earlier, every point is different because so much depends on what the game line is. We talked about it with the Rams Chiefs. So it's hard to, it's impossible to be simple math. It's very nuanced. But for the sake of the conversation, Brady and Rodgers, no surprise, 8 points. And then Russell Wilson right there, I think it was 7. So
he really, I was actually early in his career, I thought he was overrated. I thought Seattle won with their defense and he got too much credit. And you know what? I was just completely wrong about that one. He's really the guy that's keeping that whole franchise afloat right now. He's having a tremendous year. I know he's not going to be considered for MVP, but he's as valuable to his team as any player in the league. The two quarterbacks tonight, they might be the two guys that mean the most to their respective franchises in the entire NFL.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I can see that now that I think about it. We both agree that Brady is not replaceable, but, you know, success can occur.
No, he's not replaceable.
But if you're splitting hairs, hairs at the very, very top, that makes sense.
Yes. No, Brady is not replaceable, but I do think Belichick is at least as valuable to that team, if not more so. Whereas I think Rodgers and Russell Wilson are the guys to make their whole franchises go.
Terry Bradshaw would disagree with you.
Well, I don't know what to say to that. Terry Bradshaw, that's still in the freezing cold take Hall of Fame, in my opinion. Ridiculous.
One more play for me. I'm going over with the Titans and Colts, 48.5. I think Tennessee, Mariota's, I think he has some nerve issues, whatever, in his throwing hand. Much better these days. Colts are playing to the over, typically pace, sort of, not space, style. And I think this game goes over 48.5.
You know, the Titans and for $1,000. The Titans and the Colts, those are two organizations that made tremendous upgrades at the head coach position. Mike Vrabel and Frank Reich coming in there, replacing Malarkey and Pagano. And, you know, Jacksonville's got a lot of problems, but amongst their biggest problems is you've got two other teams in their division now that have very good head coaches. It's just an uphill battle for the Jaguars right now. I really like Vrabel and Reich a lot.
And, gee, go figure. It's much harder to win the division when Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson are not out for the entire season like Jacksonville did. And Jacksonville only won it with a 10-win season. It's not like they won it with 12 wins.
No, and Chuck Pagano isn't the coach of the Colts. That makes things a lot harder for everybody else in the division.
I mean, it's just crazy. We got so conditioned that these teams were good and playoff caliber. They're not. Like, Bortles is not a playoff quarterback. I'm sorry. He's caught some breaks. The defense is very good, but it was very frustrating having Jags fans thinking they were that close. Now, they were that close last year, no doubt. But
they were. They really, in a lot of ways, should have beat New England. They should have been in the Super Bowl.
But it was a bizarre year. That's my point, yeah.
Oh, it was. But, you know, they had the great win against Pittsburgh, and they really had New England on the ropes. But I know what you're saying. And that AFC South division, which was the laughingstock of the NFL for a very long time, not anymore. You've got some good coaches in there. You've got some really good young quarterbacks in there. It's a pretty tough division, the AFC South.
I agree, and I think that's why we need to pump the brakes a little bit when we try to like reinvent the wheel off some rare situations. Like, remember the Saints had to go to Seattle for a playoff game when the Seahawks had a losing record, and they're like, oh, we got to change the rules. They shouldn't be hosting it. Well, two years later, the NFC West was the best division in football.
And Seattle won that game. Seattle beat the Rams to win the division. The Rams quarterback was Sam Bradford. You remember that game?
Yes.
And Seattle won the division. Everybody was like, oh, we need to redo the whole playoff format. And then Seattle beat the Saints as like a double-digit underdog at home.
Well, that was the problem.
You're absolutely right.
A couple years later, they shouldn't be able to host teams. They shouldn't have won.
And then, two or three years later, the Seahawks and the 49ers, were maybe the two best teams in the NFC.
Right.
And they had some great matchups then, including an NFC championship game. So this stuff is very cyclical.
Right, or you don't have to overreact and say you have to redo the seeding or whatever it may be. Like, outliers are allowed to happen. Like, those things occur. You can't – that's just noise, though. You can't try to chase your tail a little bit redoing all the – rules just based on a couple occurrences here and there. So
the only thing that happens every year is the other three teams in the AFC East all suck. That's the one thing that stays consistent for the Patriots. But other than that, we see these divisions rise and fall all the time.
I want to tease New Orleans, my man. And I want to tease it to
Eric. I thought you were laying off. Okay.
No, I want to tease them. Tease them to the Chargers. Let's keep riding that Chargers situation. I will tease New Orleans -2, Chargers -1. For two dimes.
That is going to be a very popular teaser play on Sunday afternoon. I can tell you that much. That'll be the kind of bet that people in my job all across the state are rooting against, I'm pretty sure.
And it's 1:30, huh? That's just stupid.
No one's holding a gun to your head.
I mean, we used a William Hill live line a couple weeks ago.
Well, that was out of necessity. No one held your gun to the head. No one held a gun to your head there either.
Well, I have a necessity to not lay 130. All right, we'll lay it. Who cares? It's not going to come down to a little bit. All right, bud. Good stuff as always, and we'll check in next week. We'll have a little bit different taping schedule, obviously, because of the holiday. But good luck to you and the Bonanza, but not good luck to the house this weekend.
That's fine, but before I get out of here, Kai, I told you to take the points with Rutgers, not the money line, buddy. Come on, the money line.
Yeah.
Ridiculous, man.
Lesson learned, but hey.
Come on, man. It's all good.
We looked good in that first half, though. You got to admit.
Nah, they played fine. They scored a long touchdown. That shocked me. They covered the spread, but the money line, you're reaching there, pal. You're reaching the way DK is reaching buying lottery tickets.
Ooh. Hey, man, like we said yesterday, I know you didn't hear, but if you don't have somebody that puts out a crazy bet like that every once in a while, what's the point of this whole show?
Right.
All right, fair enough.
And the nice advantage right. Kai has, he can go edit the audio.
Yeah,
and saying take the points, so he's going
to
be
changes
right
his voice to say plus 40. That's fair. Okay, that's fair. Yeah, well, next Tuesday we'll tape, and then I'm going to get out of town for Thanksgiving, but I'll talk to you guys then.
All right, sounds good, bud.
All right, Murray.
All right, take care, guys.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, that does it for Murray. Mike Clay is coming up with some props. I believe he has 8 for us in the 3 games starting tonight in that showdown with the Packers and Seahawks. We'll get to Mike momentarily, but first, a message from one of our sponsors. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like this podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Well, did you know you can get even postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. Right now, use BETS, B-E-T-S, for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BETS. That's stamps.com. Enter BETS.
Talk nerdy to me.
Fantasy analyst Mike Clay joining us on the podcast like he does every week and does well with the props. Mike, how'd you do last week? I actually did not count.
I believe it was 3-2. We were, we did 5 last week and we were right around 500.
That's typically how we are. So good job, man. Good job by you.
I know we need a big week, right? We've been floating around 500 a little over for a long time. We got it. We need an 8-0 week this week.
Well, you crushed it last Thursday. So you did really well. McCaffrey scored a touchdown plus money. We both expected a high scoring game. That was like the theme of the early part of the podcast. And it was a shootout in the first half. So everything came up smelling roses then.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Carolina actually came short of there. I like the over on them, too. They came up a little short. But Pittsburgh went over. McCaffrey scored. The only mistake we made, I think, was not really diving further into the over on some of the props for Pittsburgh in that game.
It's a good point. But that happens. I mean, look, it got away from the Panthers. So let's start with this Thursday night. You have Seattle hosting Green Bay. You have 2 props for us.
Yeah, I do. One of them shocked me. Tyler Lockett is actually, you know, you look at the line here. Will he score a touchdown in this game? Yes is minus 120. No is even money. I mean, that was shocking to me. This guy's 5'10", 182 pounds. He's only handling 18% of the targets in the run heaviest offense in the league. And I get why I get why, Doug, they're going this direction. He has 7 touchdowns in 9 games this year, but it's extremely fluky. I mean, he's one of the locks, I would say, for regression to the mean. He's only seen 5 end zone targets this season. You know, I post OTD, which is opportunity adjusted touchdowns, or basically an expected touchdown number based on usage for each player. And he's at 2.2. You know, he's just not getting enough work near the goal line. So, you know, he's been highly efficient near the goal line, as has Russell Wilson this season. But, you know, when you have 5 end zone targets and only 1 additional target inside the 10, I mean, you're not going to keep up anything close to this touchdown pace. So I expect him to fall off in a hurry, and I'm definitely going towards no here at even money. So I like that one a lot.
That's not good for my fantasy team. So you're telling me not to start him?
I don't love him. I don't love him. You know, I usually bet on volume, not ridiculous touchdown rate. So, you know,
some guys try
to break it, like Lockett and Eric Ebron is kind of breaking the math this year. But over time, these guys always come back to earth, so I expect Lockett will down the stretch here as well.
Okay, and you also have Russell Wilson prop for us.
Yeah, I have him under 231.5 passing yards at minus 110. I have him at 213. Again, run heaviest offense in the NFL. They're playing at home. You know, I mentioned 231 yards is the line. He's cleared that in 5 of 9 games this season, but only 3 of the past 7 since they moved to that run heavier offense. Remember, they came out throwing early this season, and then by like week 3, they made the switch back to the run. He's averaging 218.5. this season, and actually they've been 50-50 pass versus run. They've been 50-50 at home this season, and 50-50 isn't like that's not balanced, Doug. That means you're extremely run heavy.
Okay, so you like the under there, 231.5 passing yards.
I do, yes.
Okay, let's go to Sunday night. Nice game there, Bears hosting the Vikings, and you have two props here.
Yeah, we'll start with Kirk Cousins, over 285 passing yards at minus 110. I have him projected at 301, so I'm about 16 yards over. You know, you look a little closer at what he's done this season. In 3 losses, his passing yardage totals are 359, 422, and 296. So they're all over the line for this week. And again, they're playing in Chicago, a game where you think they'll be competitive or even behind. I think Chicago wins this one by 5 points. He also threw for 425 in the tie with the Packers, so he was well over the mark. He had 301 in that close win against the Eagles, so over the mark. And then in their 4 other wins, he was at 244, 233, 241, and 164. So really, it was the close games and the win and the losses. He put up a ton of passing yards, and again, that should be the scenario here. There, you know, if you adjust for game script, it's the 5th pass heaviest offense in the NFL. And by the way, I know Chicago has a good defense, but they're allowing 6.8 yards per attempt. That's good, but that's not like dominance. That's not like 2017 Jaguars shutdown pass defense. Cousins should have a lot of volume in this game and a lot of opportunities to throw the football and at a decent rate.
Yes, but question for you, and there's some adjustments that probably have to occur when Khalil Mack plays and when he doesn't, and just given his dominance and what he does to an opposing team's offense, when Mack does play, how much of that is factored in when you do these projections for this game?
Yeah, I think that should factor in. And, you know, he's only missed 2 games. So, you know, I think you look back at a sample of 9 games, say he missed 2, fine, you could look at how they did during those 2. I don't have the splits right in front of me, but essentially he's played most of the games and played most of the snaps. He's actually played 80% of the snaps in the games he's played this season. So, you know, obviously he'll have somewhat of an impact. The Vikings certainly don't have the best offensive line in the NFL, so it's a factor. But, you know, they do have a terrific secondary. But, again, I think the key really is always going to be volume. I'm always going to fall back in volume. And I think they'll throw for 2 reasons. And it's because it's going to be close, so they'll be behind. And it is a pass-oriented offense. So that makes me feel pretty good about Cousins.
And you also have another prop for us in this one.
Yeah, I do. Adam Thielen, will he score a touchdown in this game? It's yes, minus 110, or no, minus 110. And I'm going no here. I know he's been outstanding this season, Doug, but he's never really been a guy that scores a lot of touchdowns. He's never had more than 5 in a season prior to this season, had 4 last year. You look at his expected touchdown total. We talked about that earlier with Tyler Lockett. He's only at 4.2, and he has 7 touchdowns this season, only 6 end zone targets. He's done a lot of damage between the 20s, not to mention that the Bears have only allowed 3 passing touchdowns over their past 3 games. So I'm going to go with no for Adam Thielen in the touchdown department.
Okay. All right. So let's go to Monday night. And we've heard so much about the over-under here. Could be historic if it stays at this number, 63.5. Fireworks expected on the offensive side of the ball. But I'm sensing a trend here with the props you like.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I have this one at 34-31 in favor of the Rams, right? So I'm right there with Vegas in terms of the line, or with the books in terms of the line. But in terms of player props, I think they're a little too optimistic. I mean, if I'm just looking at the projections on our site, you know, which of course I compile, I'm seeing a lot of unders that I like. And, you know, pretty much you can apply that across the board. But some specific ones here, you know, we'll start with Pat Mahomes. I have him under 325.5 at minus 110. I have him at 293. So I have him a little bit under 300 yards. And that's even with 8.2 yards per attempt projected this week, which would be the highest in the league. So I'm optimistic about the efficiency, but still it's hard to get him over 300 yards. He's been under this mark in 6 of 10 games, and he was at 326 in another. So about 60-70% of the time he's come under. I know this could be a shootout, and he can end up having to throw it a lot, which could really make this look dumb in a hurry, but I have him at the under. And then the other one for the Chiefs, you know, kind of builds into game script a little bit. You look at Kareem Hunt here, his rushing yards over is over 84.5 yards or under. They're both minus 110. And I'm going to go with the under here. You know, he's been great this year, Doug, and he's averaging 4.5 yards per carry. That's good. Handling 16.7 carries per game. But still, only his average this season is only 75.4. So this prop is about 10 yards over that. He's cleared 84 yards in only 4 of 10 games. He barely cleared 84 yards in his other three games, or in three of his other games, 86, 87, and 91. And his biggest game was 121 yards against Denver. So, you know, they've been ahead a lot, and that still only has him with a 75.5 yard average. And in this game, you know, I think they'll be trailing, or at least it'll be close. You know, and we know that Andy Reid loves to throw the football. So, you know, if you adjust for game script, they've been one of the pass heaviest teams in the league, but you know, they've been able to run because they've had the lead. I don't think that's going to be the case in that game, in this game. And I think that's going to leave Hunt on the under here, under 84.5 yards.
All right, man. It's not the most fun thing to do is root under in these props in that game on Monday night, but the props are really high. Mahomes 325 is a lot. And Goff, obviously, 320 is huge too. So won't be fun sweat, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I feel the same way on the other side of this one, too, with Goff and Cooks. That battery there, I think both of them fall short. I have the line 320.5 passing yards for Goff. I'm at 286. I mean, he's been under that in half of his 10 games this season, including four of the past five, and he's not going to have Cooper Kupp. And then, you know, you look at, but not to mention that their secondary has been playing a little bit better as of late. And then Cook, same thing, 95.5 receiving yards. I have him under that, too. I've met 77. Yeah, I mean, Cooks has been over 100 yards four times, but he's been under 91 in his six other games. And I mentioned Orlando Scandrick, Steven Nelson, Kendall Fuller. They've been playing better in that Chiefs secondary. So, you know, I know Cooks has been crazy efficient, 11.7 yards per target. But, you know, you say highly effective. I say unsustainable, Doug. You know, that's a hard number to keep up. And by the way, I'll mention one more thing. It's, you know, you might think, well, Cooper Kupp's out, so his targets will go up. Well, not necessarily. Actually, Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods have the exact same target shares when Kupp has played as when he has not played this season. Cooks at 23% and 25% for Woods. So I don't expect a huge boost in targets with him out.
All right, bud. Look, I know we were jammed with time, so appreciate your flexibility and good insight as always.
No problem. Always fun. Thanks a lot, Doug.
You got it.
Talk nerdy to me.
Thanks to Mike Clay for his time and effort into these numbers, and obviously thanks to John Murray. A lot of good stuff on the podcast, Kai. Any confessions of a non-gambler?
Yeah, it was a great podcast. If you could just go into the sides, like what exactly are sides?
It's simple. It's the when you pick a team. So if it's the line's 3.5, if you bet the team minus 3.5 or the other team plus 3.5, totals is the over-under. So a side is just whether it be the Giants.
So you're literally picking a side.
A side on the game instead of a total or a prop or a money line.
Okay.
It's just picking a side of one of the teams with a point spread involved. No problem. Any others?
Awesome. No. That was it.
You want to ask me why you're so stupid for taking Rutgers money line? That's not a confession?
That's a crime of passion.
Okay.
Man.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, hey, but, you know, we always talk about how the Giants lose. We should have spent more time about how the Giants won this week, but that's okay.
That's fair.
That's okay.
But really, they lost because of the draft, as Murray alluded to.
Yeah, it's very true.
But Eli's going to be a great quarterback for five more years, so they don't need a QB. It's fine.
Goodbye, sir.
So we are taping on Tuesday. A couple of things. What are we? And Murray and Phil. Okay, we're going to figure this out. But basically, there will be a pod posting Tuesday, maybe even both podcasts on Tuesday. So we'll figure that out. But best of luck to everyone this weekend. Hopefully I can bounce back in the bonanza. But it'll be an interesting final push here, final couple months here, final month and change here on the bonanza race. But Kai, thanks for your time as well. And we'll catch everyone back here next week, early in the week, as we adjust to the Thanksgiving schedule.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. We'll be right back.